One of the keys to Donald Trump's success last week was Pennsylvania. Democrats considered it reliably blue, and polls suggested that Hillary Clinton had a lead there. But during his campaign, Donald Trump appealed to blue-collar voters in Pennsylvania with a promise to bring back jobs.
Pennsylvania, we know this, provided steel to the entire world. It'll happen again.
Trump took 52% of the vote in Pennsylvania, which is about what President Obama won 4 years ago, flipping the state from blue to red. It was among the big surprises on election night. Most journalists, pollsters, and political consultants didn't see it coming. But in a Boston Globe piece, David Shribman says the result should not have been a surprise. Shribman is executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and a Pulitzer Prize-winning former political reporter for the Boston Globe, and he joins us on the show from Pittsburgh. And David Shribman, welcome back to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Really fascinating piece. I'm happy to be talking to you about it. You write that the sort of red shift in Pennsylvania, though it shocked many analysts, you spoke to people who saw it coming a long time ago. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there's been a huge shift in the nature of, at least in Pittsburgh and in places out here in southwestern Pennsylvania, a huge shift in the nature of work, in the nature of the economy here. There are no steel. There's only one steel mill in the Pittsburgh area. It has about 200 employees. There are fewer steel employees in this entire region than there were at the Aliquippa Works, which is about 20 miles north of here, in its heyday. This is not an area of steel production, really, anymore, though we call our football team the Steelers. But at the same time, PBD calls its football team the Tanners, and Salem calls its the Witches.
Right.
And you'll be hard-pressed to find many witches or Tanners in Salem or Peabody.
That's right. So we've seen that change, and yet there's Donald Trump talking about bringing these kinds of jobs back. I mean, why did that resonate so much?
Well, it resonated so much because people would like to have those jobs back, but people would also like to have an ice cream sundae every day for dessert. I think Mr. Trump had the right diagnosis, Dr. Trump. He had the right diagnosis, but Dr. Trump doesn't really have a prescription. Those steel jobs are not coming back. And if steel did come back to western Pennsylvania, these plants now are so efficient that they employ a infinitesimal fraction of people that they used to employ. The jobs may be coming back, a few of them, but certainly not the steel culture, certainly not the coal culture and the coke culture that was so important, that molded this area and that really won every American war between the Civil War on the Union side and World War II.
Right.
And it fueled us in Korea and Vietnam as well.
But why did so many people miss this result in Pennsylvania? And lay out a little bit your analysis that they shouldn't have missed it, that this should have been a little clearer.
Well, there are a whole swaths of this state outside of Pittsburgh and outside of Philadelphia and outside one tiny county in the middle of the state, Center County, where all the Penn State professors and students live. Every place else is red. There are tiny splotches of blue. And there's a lot of discontent in those red areas. They're rural, many of them, and there's a big rural-urban divide in this election. But there's also a divide among people who are basically blue-collar workers who don't have jobs the way they used to, or don't have the kind of expectations they once did. And the Democrats didn't speak to them. They were a party of elites. They were a party of the university faculty club and the squash club and the, minorities and women who have jobs. And those are all formidable groups. But the emphasis this time was on what Mr. Trump was having to say about the other minority group, and that's the white blue-collar workers.
So was this a case of Hillary Clinton just took sort of working-class Democrats in those rural areas for granted? I mean, for example, in southeastern Pennsylvania, focusing too much attention on suburban Philadelphia, for example.
Well, suburban Philadelphia. And when she did come here to Pittsburgh, she spoke at the University of Pittsburgh, where every single person in that audience was already for her, and every single person knew was for her. And consequently, you had a situation where students and faculty at Pitt, for example, University of Pittsburgh, have never met anyone by and large, who voted for Trump. And the people in the other counties, Westmoreland, Greene, Beaver County, have basically never met anybody who voted for Clinton. And that's a very, very dangerous thing. When we were all growing up, we had Republicans next door and Democrats next door and maybe the occasional socialist, depending on where you live, not too many. You had them in Brockton, I guess. Basically, there was an intermingling of them. There isn't that intermingling anymore. And so people's perspectives are skewed. Their experiences are skewed. When I was a young guy growing up on the North Shore, my father used to say, you know, you ought to spend 2 or 3 months in Kansas to find out that people don't think the way you do.
Yeah, right. So it almost sounds like you're suggesting, I mean, are we at risk of seeing these two parties essentially split between rural and urban areas? And that is, you know, does the Democratic Party risk becoming pretty much a party of the cities and the rest of the country being red?
Well, it has, you know, in the post-World War II era been a basically urban party, with the rural parts being, because of agriculture and trade concerns, being being Republican. But the Democratic Party traditionally was a party that had working people in the North and everybody in the South. It doesn't have hardly anybody in the South anymore, and so it's relinquished that. It also has relinquished its identity. The Democratic Party that began to form, the coalition that began to form in 1928 under Al Smith and then affirmed in 1932 and 36 under FDR, was a party of minorities, mostly European minorities, but minority ethnics, we would call them, and working people, and some intellectuals, and also people in the South. And a lot of parts of that have peeled off.
Mm. One of the questions that was raised as I read your piece, I mean, you make the point that the disappearance of these blue-collar jobs, it didn't happen overnight. It's been a long, slow process. So I'm curious, your take on this question, why the anger that motivated Trump voters came to such a sort of crescendo this election cycle? I mean, why not 35 years ago when these jobs began to disappear?
Well, the jobs disappeared very, very fast in the Rust Belt. Let's take Boston's North Shore and New Hampshire and Vermont, for example. Yeah. Those were textile and leather jobs, and they kind of seeped away in the mid-60s. By 1968 and 69, it was a flood of those jobs south and overseas. And your area, the Boston area, had a lot of New England had a lot of time to recover because it was a slow and gradual decline. The decline out here was rapid. It happened in an instant. One moment there were, you know, say 50,000 steel jobs, and 25 seconds later, there were about 14 steel jobs. And of course, I'm exaggerating. But the decline was precipitous, the shock was precipitous, and the adjustment hasn't happened because there wasn't enough time.
Yeah, I see. So much more precipitous. What's your best guess, David Tribman, about? I mean, we're talking about sort of politicians who missed this story, but one of the big stories on election night, too, was how the polls had missed this story. And the polls consistently showed that Pennsylvania was going to be a win for Hillary Clinton. What's your analysis on what happened there?
Well, the polls in Pennsylvania were way, way off. But generally speaking, let's not be too harsh on the polling industry. The polling industry had Mrs. Clinton ahead by 3 or 4 points. Well, in popular vote, she won by 1.5 or 2. So they were within the margin of error of being correct. So let's not be too tough on those guys. Here in Pennsylvania, it was more dramatic, and I'm not quite sure why. But I did go to a focus group in April or early April. Peter Hart, the Democratic pollster, did in conjunction with the University of Pennsylvania. And it was out here in Pittsburgh, and it was a bunch of people who were undecideds. And I came away from that saying, Donald Trump can win this election. I didn't think so going in, but the minute I heard those people, it was so clear. The undecideds, to a one, hated Hillary Clinton. Oh, hate's a terrible word. They had contempt for Hillary Clinton. They thought she was a phony, that she was a liar, she was part of a dynasty. They didn't like her. They weren't wild about Donald Trump, but they were open to him. And it was really revealing to me how open people who are undecided and were not closely identified with parties felt. They did not like Mrs. Clinton. It reminds me of the old story about the creation of a dog food that had all nutrients, and it probably had lots of vitamins, and today it would have kale in it, and it was organic, and it was really great, except the dogs didn't like it.
Yeah. I'm curious to know what you think about where this will go. You know, we heard Donald Trump at the beginning of this segment promising to bring those jobs back again, which, of course, as you point out, I mean, it's not like he can sort of wave a magic wand and make Pittsburgh the sort of steel producing powerhouse that it once was. So if he can't deliver that, do you suspect that many of those working class folks who supported him will lose faith in him? And if he doesn't deliver?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, Pittsburgh's economy now has changed dramatically. On my way over here to the studio, I passed a driverless car that's being developed by Uber. Mm. Uber is very big here. So is Google. So is Rand. We have huge hospital complexes here. We have two very, very fine universities and a bunch of other superb colleges. We really are the Boston of the Middle West. It's a college town. In the 14 years I've been here, the profile and character of this community has changed dramatically. It's basically changed from Pittsburgh to Boston.
Oh, interesting. Right. So is this a case, though, of these new industries leaving too many people behind? I mean, once you get outside of Pittsburgh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the situation?
Well, yes, they're leaving a lot of people behind, and those people left behind decided to get out in front on election day, and they did. And they were a silent people who were very, 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 very soundly heard.
I want to ask you one final sort of question or talk about one final theme here, and that is, as a veteran newspaper man, what's the lesson of this election for folks who cover politics?
Well, let's just agree, first of all, that veteran newspaper man is not the profile anybody wants these days.
But I use that only in the most complimentary way.
Right. I know. You say it with affection. And veteran newspaper man is almost redundant. But in any case, I would say this. The lesson is that no matter how interesting the candidates are, the voters are always more interesting. And had we listened a little less to the candidates and a little more to the voters, I think we would have all been a lot better off. These elections, we think they're about candidates, but they're really about voters.
I think that's very wise and a good place to end this talk with you. David Tribman, thanks so much. He's the executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and a Pulitzer Prize-winning former politics correspondent for the Boston Globe. You can find a link to his piece in the Globe, an outcome that should have surprised no one, at RadioBoston.org. David Tribman, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Stay with us. Coming up, the filmmakers of the new HBO documentary Marathon, The Patriots' Day Bombing. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.